Fine. We now move on to HBF, I think. HBF has been doing a major study looking at land-water interface, much of the things we've been talking about, and in particular looking at activities on the water and how they might best be catered for. And Mrs. Brooke, my wife, is, I think, going to brief us on where we are on the study. Thank you. I think, indeed, on the some of the outcomes. Thank you. Right, who's going to lead?
I'm going to start.
Okay, fine, thank you.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon to everyone. And I'm well aware we've been here quite some time already, so I'll try and get through this reasonably quickly. I'm also being helped by some of the conversation and discussion earlier on, because obviously some of the ideas that we've supported from previous research that we've done and have found again during the study has already been accepted by the Commission as something areas that we ought to pursue, which makes it rather easier to go through this. This is the latest piece of Harbour Business Forum research.
Can we go to full screen?
Oh, apologies. Yep.
Thank you.
Sorry. We came in February and reported on the initial findings. At that stage, the report was merely called the Marine Study because we hadn't really got very far with it. It is now completed, which is why we're here today, and it has been retitled the Victoria Harbour Water Dependent and Water Related Uses and Associated Land Water Interface Implications. In view of the very long title, I suspect it will still be called the Marine Study. The agenda this afternoon, very quickly, you can see there, and we'll start with a general background and introduction and then move forward to what I'm going to call the study deliverables rather than conclusions, because to be quite honest, a lot of the conclusions have been reached before and we're supporting it with more research and rather a different approach on this occasion. The study looks at the harbour, study introduction. This study is all about Victoria Harbour as a whole. It looks at the harbour on an integrated way, as against simply the harbour front or the water. And we think this is, and have thought for some time, that this is the only way to avoid unintended consequences which can potentially arise for adjoining areas are planned in isolation. We fully agree with the views expressed earlier that there needs to be coexistence between the recreational and working uses around the harbour, and really we have to look at the harbour as an integrated whole in order to make the optimal use of the harbour with both those borne in mind. Just to remind you of the study objectives, the study was actually started to record the evolving marine activity and land uses around the harbour and show how and where the two interact, and to determine the extent to which sectoral planning, by which we mean planning on a site-by-site or location-by-location basis as against as a whole, is causing potential problems or leading to missed opportunities. And we consider the need for possible administrative, regulatory and policy changes to improve harbour utility for a broader public interest and outline a number of indicative programmes for harbour enhancement that highlight the potential opportunities in collective multi-sector planning. And really, these programmes are proposed much more to demonstrate how we really need an integrated planning approach as against being important programmes in their own right. The study outputs, if you remember, we mentioned last time, we were going to have a new database and an interactive harbour map on the one hand, and then there was the study report on the other. We think this is just about the first integrated database of Victoria Harbour's land and marine assets, interfaces and uses. And we have produced an interactive Google Earth-based map that shows the locations of the facilities which are listed in our database as they are around the harbour. Both of these are going to be uploaded to a new website, victoriaharbour.hk, which is being hosted by HBF, and we intend to make both tools freely available for public use. With reference to the database and the interactive map. They've been compiled using publicly available information. They're the best we think we can do with the data that's available, but no doubt someone will tell us we could do better. And should anybody note inaccuracies or errors or omissions, we will be very happy to correct these and expand the database as necessary, as well as add more topics should these be considered helpful and reliable data can be made available to us. It's HBF's intention to update the website at least once every year. Quite a lot of statistics are only issued on an annual basis, but at least once a year, and more frequently should there be significant changes, important changes that we think should be included as soon as possible. And we're hoping to work with one of the universities to ensure that the data remains not only reliable, but also as complete and updated as possible. The study builds on a previous rather major piece of research done by HBF, the Integrated Harbour Vision and Delivery Plan, which was released in 2009. The IHS called for a fully integrated approach to planning, development and management of Victoria Harbour, something I think which since 2009 has very much been taken on board. The fully integrated approach was reached after we had done quite a lot of research on why we thought Victoria Harbour was really not delivering on its potential and was really not the world-class harbour and harbour that we would all like to see it to be. The fully integrated approach had six components which we propose were policy commitment, a common vision brought into by all, a strategic framework to show how projects or programs link to the vision, a strategic plan as to how the vision could be realised, an overarching accountable body, which of course the previous discussion has brought rather closer than we ever dared hope, that would be implement the plan and changes in the regulatory system to provide the accountable body with the authority, resources and management tools it needs to do the job we would all like to see it do. The IHS acknowledged that the marine aspects of the harbour had not been addressed in that study, and this new study now adds this very important element, and the database and interactive map and greater clarity as regards necessary policy and process changes which we consider to be necessary and required. The vision adopted for this study, you will not be surprised to see, is the HBF vision for the harbour, and we've emphasised again now to revitalise Victoria Harbour and its harbour front to become an attractive, diverse, vibrant, accessible and sustainable world-class asset for the economy, people and visitors of Hong Kong. A harbour for the people, a harbour of life. Two new planning tools I will ask Tom to present details about.
Thank you, Maggie. May I pull this over? As Maggie has said, a key output of this study are these two new harbour planning tools, the Harbour Interface Database and a interactive harbour map that allows a much deeper understanding of the harbour as a whole. Now, this deeper understanding is both of the use of land around the harbour edge and also the use of the water too. I will explain the database very quickly first. We've had requests that these both be demonstrated. That is the database in front of you. It's a good thing you've all got your screens in front of you. If it's on a projector, it would be impossible to see. because there's so much detail. It's an exceptionally detailed database. This harbour database is an Excel-based database that documents for the first time, to our knowledge, ever, all the facilities around the harbour front of Victoria Harbour. And it covers the entire harbour front, site by site. It pulls together what would otherwise have been scattered information across separate government departments and public information sources to form a comprehensive data set that reflects the status quo of the harbour and also what we know about its future planned and committed uses. Maggie's already made the point about this being based on public information. There might be information out there held privately that is not reflected in this database. This database is, to the best of our knowledge, based on publicly available information sources, and HBF welcomes the opportunity to work with harbour stakeholders where deemed necessary to complete or to provide further detail. I won't go through, obviously, everything in this database. It's very, very complicated. But to give you a flavour, we have a number of sheets, the first one covering absolutely every site walking its way around the north side and the south side of Victoria Harbour. It covers individually also both Hong Kong Island and Kowloon and the New Territories as well, just to provide a little bit more breakdown. There's also some information we've gathered from Chung Kwan Oh and Lee Yu Mun, Green Island as well, which is currently outside our study area, but if we've started to gather the information. Returning back to the first slide, I'll very quickly show you what this thing can do. Essentially, it goes site by site around the harbour to show the general uses that we've classified the sites are currently used for. It can show who operates and maintains each and every one of these uses. It gives the length of the water line and the water frontage at each of these sites. It shows whether the water adjoining that land is either open water or sheltered water. It shows whether there's public access to the waterfront. It shows who owns the site, whether it's government or private, whether it's a permanent facility, whether it's a temporary facility, what its zoning is, and also whether there are any planned or committed future uses for this site, such as the major development projects that are currently being planned or currently underway within the Victoria Harbour area. This is information we've gathered to the best of available capacity and knowledge for each and every site adjoining Victoria Harbour around both sides of the harbour front. It's quite a remarkable tool. Moreover, the way it's been set up, it allows all users to relatively quickly search and filter their data. So, for example, we can come down here and just look at all the uses in Central, for example. These coloured cells refer to the future development areas, by the way, which I'll show more better on the map. But it's this ability to analyse data, to review data, that the much of the analysis you'll see in the rest of this presentation has been developed on. But we think it's a tremendous tool and very, very useful, certainly for the future strategic planning of Victoria Harbour. I will now show you the interactive map. And if you think the database looks cool and groovy, you should look at the map. It's based in Google Earth. It's a Google Earth plugin. It's very simple to download Google Earth and have a look around it. A quick reminder first in terms of the study area. This is the study area we've looked at. It's pretty much as per the Harbour Commission's remit in terms of the harbour limits. The extension is down here in the Eastern Harbour where we've included Chai Wan, which is beyond the Commission's official study area, but Chai Wan is a very interesting body of water, so we've included it in our own analysis. There's a lot of information here. I will try and just give you a summary of what this can do. So, for example, the database talks quite a lot about land, but this also has the capacity to talk about water. So, for example, it talks about the main uses of water bodies. We have the main fairway, as shown in the Marine Department presentation earlier, running through the centre of the harbour. We can show you where all the ferry routes are around the harbour. We can show you that out in the Eastern Harbour, this white patch tends to be used for military uses. We can show you where the port is. We can show you where The current purple is where the current industrial and municipal use is. And we can show you where the main passenger and transport areas are. And what do we have left over? We have the, here we go, the anchorages and all the anchorages and all the mooring buoys in Victoria Harbour. In addition to this, we can show you where the leisure boats are currently kept and where the fishing boats are currently kept. I mean, it's very high level. Well, it's actually not high level, it's remarkably detailed, but it's from a high level initial view, you can see quite a lot of what's going on around the harbour. Now, that is just the predominant use of water. If we take that off, we can now go and look at the land. So, this is where we use the database as well. We can show the predominant use for all the land adjoining the harbour. Break it down, you can see we've got the residential, we've got the commercial, municipal and community, all the various relevant land uses are there. We've also put this plug-in where you can show the key sites. So for example, we can zoom in and we've overlaid the Kaitak environmental layout plan over the Kaitak site. You can immediately see how the future plans relate to what is currently there. Likewise, coming on Central, again, it's the master urban layout plan for Central. Immediately, again, you can see how the future use or committed use relates to what is currently on the water. Now, the key point of this entire study is all about the interfaces. Interfaces is something that this database really can show quite a lot on. For example, we can highlight where all the piers are, so that's publicly available information, where all the piers are around the harbour, where the landing steps are, where the access ramps are, where the pontoons are. There is a lot, every single bit of land-water interface that's currently existing around the harbour we have on hand. And it's when you cross-reference things like this, when you see the density of the piers in certain locations and yet not in others, the density of the water steps in certain locations and not in others, you immediately start to see the problems in potential new developments or new sites and in providing waterborne access, not just land access but also waterborne access as well, along with the harbour planning principles that endorses water planning transport. One final thing, just to show you the use, is to show you the ability to cross-reference obviously what's going on the land against what's going on the water. And while that itself is a very detailed and very complicated to look at initially picture, you can very quickly see where there are certain potential incongruent uses by looking at this map in much more detail. And again, this is the basis of all planning needs to do a strategic plan, and it's a very, very useful tool. I won't go too much more into detail about the actual incongruent uses. That's part of Maggie's presentation. Hopefully you'll all agree that these are two exceptionally useful tools that we intend to make available for public use. Maggie.
Thank you very much. Hopefully.
You will agree that it could be, and we hope will be, not just for HBS and the Harbour Front Commission, but anybody else who's interested in the harbour, two very useful tools for future use. I will quickly go through some other screens. Now you've seen how we got some of the information and what we have there and how it works. Harbour usage is quite easy to now find out from not a particularly detailed view, from a trend view. We've actually just put some figures here about the harbour. You had 2010 figures from Marine Department earlier on, so probably not going through these in any great detail, but they'll be obviously on the Harbour Front Commission website should you want to have a look at them. Harbour characteristics, and we have to thank the Director of Marine for making this particular screen available to us. Typhoon shelters, they've been mentioned earlier today. These are the seven in the harbour. We can work out, well, from the sheltered waterfront. Now, sheltered water is obviously important as against open water when you come to think about moorings and the use of the waterfront. So here we have some detail on sheltered water, of its open water and location of the sheltered water areas within the harbour. major marine infrastructure. Apologies for the rather small print on here, but we wanted to show the absolute range of things that you can actually, you can produce from the database. And of course, this sort of range of information allows you to draw some trends and see where some movement within the harbour is happening as it develops and as the economy develops and changes. Geographic subdivisions, predominant uses of the water at present, and as we learned earlier on, logistics and municipal in the western harbour, and much and more recreation transport in the eastern harbour, and that trend seems to be continuing. Relating land uses to water uses, just to refresh the memory on what we're calling water-dependent and related uses, water-dependent are essential activities that must physically be located in, on, over, or adjacent to the water in order to conduct their primary purpose and function. Water-related activities not dependent on direct access to water to conduct primary purpose, but which provide goods or services directly related to water-dependent uses, so therefore it's useful if they're close by, if possible. We've done some classification of land uses around the harbour into these five key areas. There are also others, but as you can see, logistics is still a major part of harbour use, as are the municipal uses, and recreation and open space around the harbour is growing. Water-dependent, water-related uses. Again, this is all drawn from the database, and you can find out where these come from. Land use fronting sheltered water. Now, this is quite important and really was one of the areas, the key objectives when we first started doing the study. Were we using the waterfront in appropriate ways for what was happening on the water? And how did, had changes on the water perhaps now sort of impacted with uses we now had on the waterfront? And this is, again, quite useful from the integrated land water use interface planning point of view. Identification of potential land-water interface issues. These are the maps that Tom was speaking about earlier. You can allow easy identification of potentially incongruous uses or ones that are perhaps not as consistent with the surrounding land as they once, as they could be and once were in some cases. No waterside access at West Kowloon. Quite a long distance from West Kowloon. And I think a lot of people think water borne access would be really quite useful there. No waterside access at Kai Tak and potential loss of access at Kwun Tong. We have got some access at the end of the Kwun Tong waterfront, but nothing around Kai Tak at all except the cruise terminal. Some policy recommendations. These are very similar to some of the ones that came out of the IHS. Here you will see we think we need a new interpretation, and I think people have already agreed this. We have three harbour visions that we've come up with in the last few years in Hong Kong. They all mention the harbour. They all mention the harbour front. But, of course, none of them were actually interpreted to mean the harbour as a harbour, the harbour as a whole. And we hope very much that going forward, the harbour can be looked at as a whole and on and planned on an integrated basis. Progress towards the fully integrated approach, which we suggested in the IHS, we've obviously had some considerable policy commitment. I mean, the commitment of the Secretary today was a point to note. But previously, she's already helped us get considerable help and direction as far as harbour improvement is concerned. We have, I think, now a buy-in to a vision that unites most of the stakeholders on a common goal and agreed targets for the harbour front and the harbour. Strategic framework, not quite yet. Strategic plan, we're working on it. Overarching responsible body, great step forward made today. Changes to the planning and delivery system to support such an overarching body, that obviously will be in the future. But, again, closer than it was. One of the instances of policy commitment, which was very welcome when the Harbourfront Commission was set up, was, of course, the general circular issued by the Chief Secretary. We just note the main points here. And certainly it gave a lot of support and put the onus on quite a lot of stakeholders to get behind the vision for the harbour. However, we think this should now be expanded in view of the accepted importance of the land and water interface, that we should it should maintain efficient use of the harbour as a harbour, not just as a separate water body and a separate harbour front, but as a harbour. Transport by water should be facilitated. Land and water uses at the harbour front should be interdependent and interactive with those on the water. Actively managed harbour front venues and destinations are crucial to sustaining vitality in the harbour, and improvements that facilitate use of the harbour for public benefit are to be welcomed, and perhaps some of the previous impediments we can find our ways round in future. Strategic framework, yes, we haven't quite got as far as we would like, as far as HBF would like on this. We have, of course, the 22 action areas under the Harbour Front Commission, and the various task forces take these very seriously and are working on them very hard. We would like, though, to see these folded in to an overall strategic plan and reviewed within the strategic plan for the harbour as a whole, not simply on a case-by-case basis, although it is recognised that actually, obviously, some of them, very good work has been done within those particular areas. Indicative harbour programmes. As I said, these have largely been put forward as identified for their potential to add value to the harbour as a harbour, and also as help in how you might implement projects on a harbour basis, as against the previous way we were looking at them as simply on a harbour front basis. Rationalisation of the working harbour facilities, additional pleasure boat facilities, and that would include marinas. Flexible water transport, marine heritage preservation and display, revitalisation of piers, which we've spoken about previously, and water-based events, arenas and facilities. Programme selection criteria, we put this forward as a way of looking at programmes and projects on the harbour on an integrated basis. The ability to promote community ownership, we think, is important, so to increase the harbour as a public asset with active water uses and efficient land-water interfaces to ensure vibrancy and diversity. A presumption that priority is given to essential water-dependent harbourfront uses. There are some things that we do need and they can't go anywhere else. Ability to create places of distinctive character and attractions for communities and visitors, and that can be in the working harbour as well as in the recreational harbour. Potential to foster small and medium-scale enterprises to serve the marine and leisure uses of the harbour. Very difficult to have a really active and vibrant harbour if you have no facilities for either the marine needs or the leisure needs, such as boat building, such as boat repair, such as slipways, etc., etc. Use of the harbour for public benefit may justify limited reclamation, and we've spoken about this before, and it's within the context of the discussions we've had before. These programmes are not looking at what, why, and where. They're really, the focus is on how they could be implemented, and the key point is that implementation of these programmes will be very unlikely without the adoption of an integrated approach to land and water planning. And we quite like this particular graphic, which just indicates that we really do think all these depend on each other. And you could put any of these within the centre or around the outside, and it would still come to the same answer. The proposals, I don't intend that anybody, I certainly am not going to read these out, and I don't think anybody would want to at this stage. But it just shows that we have gone into some thought about how and what these programmes would consist. And they will certainly be made available to you if you're interested in reading them. There are, in the full report, full descriptions of all of these particular indicative programmes. So, flexible water transport, maritime heritage in the harbour, revitalisation of the piers. We feel very strongly about this because quite a lot of the other programmes do depend upon having places where you can land, disembark, embark, and we know that it would be difficult to put new harbours back into the harbour if we lost any of the ones that we currently have and aren't being used. Water events and arenas for such and facilities on the harbour front that would facilitate these sort of things to happen on the water. There are integrated ways in which we could make the harbour a very, very interesting place for major water events. and rationalisation of the water above the working harbour. Marine Department said earlier that it was rationalising itself slowly into the west from the working harbour, but there are elements that obviously will remain in the eastern harbour and are very attractive to visitors. But this all needs to be thought of in an integrated way so that we don't make changes on the waterfront, which then prevent things happening on the water, and vice versa, to be honest. We've done some qualitative economic benefits. As you say, I said we have put these forward as indicative programs, but we wouldn't want to put anything forward that didn't actually stack up as having some advantages. These are the qualitative economic benefits that we've come up with. We haven't prepared business cases as such. These could be prepared if people wish to take these forward. It was much more as an indication as to how we see the need for a strategic plan where all these things are thought of before we actually go into print on anything, really. Study conclusions, study deliverables. We had a lot of stakeholder feedback on the creation of a world-class harbour and what quite a lot of our stakeholders felt were important to be considered and the various factors. Interpretation of the PHO, a lot of the stakeholders, of course, were not actually familiar with the discussions that the Society has put forward on the protection of the harbour ordinance and how this could be reinterpreted, perhaps, when the public benefit and public interest is a point to be considered. They felt that short-term leases and licences needed rethinking, and that did cause some issues on the harbour front, and poor access generally, and that's obviously something we've been talking about. They thought that enablers would be a strategic plan, clustering of various uses would be helpful, and obviously the community has to be involved and engaged in deciding on what they really see as attractive in the harbour. The proponents, we think much more use should be made of public-private collaboration. There are a lot of private sector interest in having improvements to the harbour. We should be drawing on that in the way the Commission is already planning to do. Communities and district councils are very important and can be brought into individual districts and given impetus to various projects. And we need an agency with resources, which we have discussed today. Existing operators and clubs should be thought of as resources. A lot of them would be willing to give advice and help and support. And self-supporting venue mix we need. And perhaps some government seed money, but that could come through the statutory authority, which we're now considering, or other dedicated agencies to harbourfront and harbour planning. Study deliverables. As you've seen, we have a comprehensive database. A harbour use audit, I think, is fair enough to the best of our ability, and the related Google Earth-based interactive map. Identification of the strategic importance of supporting water-dependent uses. Review of changes in activities in the use of the harbour and the implications of these, not only for land-water interfaces, but strategic planning in general. A recommended approach to making planning and development decisions that optimise integrated future use of the harbour and the harbourfront. A possible strategy for zoning of water bodies related to land-water interfaces, infrastructure and hydrogeographic conditions. Suggested programmes to deliver an integrated harbour vision. A foundation for strategic planning of the harbour and the harbourfront as a whole. We do see the database and the interactive map as a baseline of information upon which strategic planning of the harbour as a whole could be taken ahead. And data and criteria to support decisions on existing and future programmes on or around the harbour. I hope you agree that it was worth continuing completing this particular piece of work. It is an extension of IHS, but we hope it adds another very important element, as the harbour, quite clearly, without the water, is not a harbour. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Clearly a very important piece of work, one on which we can draw going forward. I think HPF, we should put on record, I think, our appreciation to HPF. In a way, they've done quite a lot of our work for us. I think we should put that on record. I think also, in a way, they challenge us, which I think is healthy. You know, they've identified many major areas and many major things that should and could be done, and I think we need to address those issues and as part of our strategic planning. So I think the exercise is much appreciated and well worthwhile. We will certainly draw on it going forward. And I think it'll focus us too, help focus us. But members, any questions of HBF? Winston, please. Thank you.
A very quick point. First of all, congratulations on a wonderful piece of work. Really, extremely useful. I've done 3 months' research since my direction by the chairman to prepare a paper, which I take very seriously. The basic point is this. If you build a wall around the harbour and cannot use the harbour, then the harbour misses its function. But on the other hand, if in the name of using the harbour, you take away too much of the harbour, then it's gone. There's no harbour left. And the problem is that everyone wants a piece of the harbour, starting from the government down to developers and so on and so forth. So my first request is, whatever you do, and we do need to prepare a strategic plan, it must be on the basis of touching the harbour only as a last resort. Whatever you want to do, do it on existing land. Don't sell it. Get the government to listen to you, and Mr. Chen was very encouraging this morning. No more land sales on harbourfront. Use the harbourfront for whatever purposes you want. And only touch the harbour if you really need to. We have discovered 4 values of the harbour which may be useful to you. Right? The first, obviously, is the economic value. The second is the social value, recreation and all that. And the third is the environmental value, which speaks for itself. And finally, there's one that you've missed. But I've spoken to a lot of people in Hong Kong, and you are Hong Kong people. I'm sure you share this very important value. It's called the emotive value. So many people now say to me, don't touch the harbour. We want it as it is. Never mind laying it with gold or whatever good purposes and so on. People just lost the harbour as it is. So don't touch, unless you have to. I will be submitting the paper. The draft is ready, but I need to discuss it with the Secretary for Justice before I submit it to this committee. It's only fair that I discuss the matter with the government. He has the duty of upholding the laws of Hong Kong, not our society. So it will be useful for us to see eye to eye on that. And someone has suggested, I think it's Peter Cookson,
Smith, who is just there. Yes, sorry.
Anyway, that we should invite the chairman to come to see the Secretary of Justice with us. And you're more than welcome.
Thank you.
I'll let you know. You're more than welcome.
Honest broker.
The strategic plan will be extremely useful to make decisions with regard to reclamation. Because to do it piecemeal, everyone wants a marina, wants this, wants that. But if you have an overall strategic plan, there's a very good answer. It will not set a dangerous precedent. And in fact, one of the conclusions we have arrived at is that a strategic plan as suggested by you is absolutely essential for the implementation of the ordinance. And that is all I have to say. Thank you so much for an excellent piece of work.
Thank you.
Thank you, Winston. Please. Becky, please.
One clarification and one suggestion. I just want to clarify that this presentation would be available to us, right? Because it's not in the package that we received.
No, I'm sorry. It was completed at midday today. You will certainly have a copy on the website. Yes.
Yeah, thank you. And for the Google Earth database, it would be available on the HBF website, right?
Yeah, the new website will be launched in about a month's time. It's just about there, but we've got quite a lot of testing to do. And there will be an instructional video on there, plus a presentation on how you use it, how you download it. Everything's free, but you do need to just download things if you want to play with it yourself, as against trying to do things online. So yes, it'll all be there, and it'll be available, and we'll make sure the Commission is made aware when the website is launched.
Yeah, perhaps Kenneth can inform us. So for the minor suggestion, when you talk about the planning tools, the Google Earth, well, the land use will be very helpful, but in the context of Hong Kong, the GFA, or actual height, the mass and the layout of the buildings would also be very important. And for one, actually I've written to the director of planning, the former director of planning, to get some information about the GFA. It was actually not available. So
no.
if it is possible, that it would be very helpful that if HBF can also consider such an aspect for the Harbour Fund.
Thank you, Becky. This is really what I meant by if anyone else it would be happy to make available to us, we are happy to install it if we can. But a lot of this is not available publicly unless you pay quite a lot of money, and I'm afraid HBF has spent most of its money. but no, I mean, if there is data that would be, and I quite agree with you, I'd like to put a lot more of that type of data onto the database, but we do have to be permitted access to it, and we do have to be sure that we have ways within HBF of being able to keep that up to date. The one thing we didn't want to do is launch something and then 6 months later it's out of date and we've got no way of keeping it reliable and up to date.
Thank you, Becky. Thank you. Any other thoughts, suggestions, members? This is a very useful piece of work on which we can build, I think. And certainly in terms of our strategic plan, there's a lot of stuff there that we can feed into our thinking. Yeah. Good, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.